Good afternoon, everybody. I am so excited. My heart has been pounding for like the last 20 minutes because I'm so excited to bring my guest to you today. So let me go through all the technical babble first, and then I will get to my guest. So this is hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is a program in which I interview people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, we know who we are, but not who we will be. And I believe that to be 100% true. And I believe that there is no better example of that than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into cells, then reforms itself into a butterfly. As if that wasn't weird and difficult enough, it has to fight its way out of the cocoon in order to be strong enough to fly. That is no easy task. And neither is busting through limits that society, family members, doctors, teachers have placed upon you. I am just elated. I mean, you just have no idea how excited I am to have Catherine with us today. Catherine is my mentor. As you see at the top of my screen and at the bottom of the screen, I am a Master IEP coach. She is the founder of the Master IEP Coach program. Not only that, but Catherine is the sibling to a wonderful grown man whose name I'll let her share if she wants to. but he is awesome. I've not gotten to meet him in person, but she talks about him all the time. And I've seen dozens of pictures of him. And so he has Down syndrome and he's just wonderful. And a lot of that has to do with Catherine and their mom. Catherine also has some experiences as a special education teacher, and she's just got lots and lots to share. So without further ado, I am Shelly Kino. Welcome, Catherine.
Oh, Shelly, thank you for having me here today. I'm excited to have this conversation.
So this is unusual for you because usually you're the one that I see at least doing the interviewing. So how does it feel to be on the other side?
Oh, I love this part. I do a lot of interviews kind of outside of our Master IEP Coach circle, talking about special education, talking about all of the technical things that are happening inside of our education community. But this is definitely a different conversation to talk a little bit more personal. So I'm excited to share a bit about my story and, you know, you'll see why the Master IEP Coach is what it is and why it's set up the way that it is. It's because I've been there and done that as a special needs sibling.
Yeah. So make sure if you're watching that you give us a hashtag live or a hashtag replay if you're watching in the replay. If you have any questions for Catherine, be sure to put them in the comment section and I will be sure to share them with her. She loves to answer questions and she is the most amazing out of the box thinker when it comes to solutions. Do you feel like am I buttering you up enough? I
mean, you are. I'm like, all right. I'm just going to keep letting you go. All right.
Everything I'm saying, I truly believe. You have really inspired me as far as special education. I think I wrote in the explanation for today or the advertisement, whatever you want to call it, that I was passionate about special education before I met you. And now that passion is even deeper and I'm just able to think differently about things, even though I had been in the field for over 20 years before I met you. So tell us what it was like. As I mentioned, you have a brother growing up. So what was that like?
So, I mean, most of us special needs siblings will say we didn't know any different. Like our life was just our life. But I can say now as, a grown adult and, you know, being a mom myself, and I see all the differences that I experienced as a sibling that, you know, my friends who were not in my circle of the disability community, I knew they didn't know what my life was like. I knew enough as a child to know, like, ooh, they don't get it. But I didn't care that they didn't get it because I had my own people. I had my own family. So, you know, for example, in high school, my friends were not necessarily the friends that I went to high school with. Sure, I had some friends, but my friends were the fellow Special Olympics coaches because I spent all my time outside of school coaching Special Olympics. And it's not because I didn't have any interest of my own or my parents forced me to do it. It's where I wanted to be. It was fun. It was where I belonged. And I felt that and I knew that, you know, earlier in my, you know, childhood, I can remember a lot of differences. I can, you know, remember a story of my brother and I only went to the same school for a very, very small amount of time. And I can remember going home and saying to my mom, you know, why is my brother standing on the wall during recess? Well, wow. That's a whole other story of what came about from that. Let me just tell you, my brother did not stand on the wall excluded for recess any day after that. So there was a lot of differences, but you know, nothing that I would ever take back, really. It all kind of all comes together as an adult, and you can look back and say, okay, I get it. And I get why what happened, whether it was standing on the wall, or why did I have the friends that I had? Why did I have the experiences that I have? You know, watching my mom advocate strong. My dad was kind of like that typical dad in the 80s that just like, okay, honey, whatever you need. Like he would show up if he had to, but he kind of just let my mom take the lead when it came to education and those kind of things. So it was definitely an interesting childhood. There's a lot of stories, a lot of things. But again, it's part of who I am, and it's part of where I'm going. It's part of what I built. And I'm grateful to my brother for who he is and just the lessons that he has taught me. He is probably one of the strongest, if not the strongest person I've ever met.
And you don't mean that physically.
Actually, I could say not exclusively physically. Physically, mentally, emotionally, you know, when I look at the things that I've been through, even as an adult, like we can talk about that as an adult. You know, I know we talk a lot about like kids and disabilities, but like adults with disabilities, like it's, you know, he has gone through the loss of my father. He has gone through a move across the country. He has gone through, you know, I went through a divorce. Well, that was his brother-in-law, you know? So like that's a loss for the entire family. There's been a lot of things, you know, he has gone through the pandemic, right? He has lost his friends through that. He, you know, didn't get a job for a long time because of that. Like he goes through all of these things and people might think that he doesn't understand all of that because his expressive language is much different than his receptive language. So he understands a whole lot more. He feels a whole lot more than he will ever tell you.
Yeah. And I hope that you will talk with to us a little bit more about that, because I have a very bad habit of when I think of people with disabilities, because my experience was, you know, children. I taught them through eighth grade. I didn't work in the high schools. And so I have this really bad habit of having a picture in my head of a child, but they absolutely grow up and live life. So I hope you will share with us some of those things. Watching it, you shared yesterday, I think it was, about an incident that happened with your brother. And I was heart-wrenched. And he's not my brother.
So, right.
You know, how does that feel when, you know, because you guys lived right on top of one another, like literally your yeah. place was above theirs or vice versa. And now they're in a southern state and you're in middle western state. So
yeah.
How do you process that? What's that
so
like?
I'll give some context for those of you that don't follow me on Instagram and kind of didn't see what happened. So I don't mind sharing a little bit. We don't have all the answers, and I'm a big believer in that you speak from scars, not from wounds. So when I tell stories, it's, you know, anything that I share about my brother, about, you know, being a mom, about master IP coach, you know, how it all came to be. Those are all things, those are kind of like lessons learned. And we don't have all the answers. So what happened was my brother obviously has Down syndrome, but he has a lot of other medical things that are just weird. And that happens in the disability community. We get a lot of weird things, like heart issues are common with people with Down syndrome. Yet my brother's heart has been beating in an odd rhythm his entire life. Like every time somebody sees one of his printouts of his heartbeat, they're like, oh, they come running in the room like, oh my gosh, like we need to go. And my mom's like, let me see that. Like my mom can read it. She's like, nope, that's my son. Like, I know you think it's broke. It ain't broke. We ain't fixing it, kind of thing.
Right.
He also has diabetes, which means, of course, he has this Down syndrome body that just works differently, which means that all the protocols for diabetes that you think are supposed to work, that are supposed to be textbook, of course, they don't work. So we're constantly figuring things out. There's all of these different things. And my brother did get a new job. He's working at Panera. Panera has been a beautiful company, super supportive, very inclusive, high expectations of him. He worked his 5-hour shift and he was waiting. He was checking out because he gets his half price meal and he was so excited. He gets his flatbread. And my mom was waiting outside of Panera for him to get his meal and come on out after his shift. And somebody, an employee came running out of the restaurant and my mom's like, is everything okay? She says, oh, somebody with a disability just passed out. And she goes, oh, does he work there? And she goes, yeah. And my mom was like, that's my son. So my mom went in and my brother was on the floor and there's all the drama and all the things. And I don't know all the details because, again, I live in Illinois. They live in Florida, which is a new experience for us. With the exception of a few years here and there, my brother and I have lived within an hour. Sometimes within a minute, there was a time we lived in the same townhouse building. They had one unit and I had another unit. I'm used to getting all the details, but what I do know is that he was injured pretty badly. And it's not pretty. His glasses went into his eye. He's got this big black eye. He's got just all of these things. And here's the thing. Number one, we had to convince him, or my mom had to convince him, that he had a black eye. He's like, no, I'm fine. We're like, look in the mirror. You're not like, that's what, when I say strong physically, he's just like, yeah, I'm fine. Like, no, dude, that's called denial. Stop. Like you have a black eye, cut it out. He went to, did all the tests, did all the things. We don't have clear answers on why he passed out. We could probably make some assumptions based on his medical needs of what that is. But this is the stuff that we deal with very differently in the adult world than we do in the child world too. Because how you take care of a child who's sick versus an adult who's sick, it's different. We're dealing with different types of doctors, different types of personnel. Different people have very different expectations of an adult with a disability. Some people are very much like, he's an adult. He needs to answer his own questions. And other people are like, can he even talk? Like there's this wide range, which I know happens as a child too, but it's extra strange as an adult to have that. So we're going through some medical things that way. And that's just one of the challenges as a special needs sibling, as a disability family. You know, one of the reasons I shared on Instagram and I didn't share for several weeks because I wanted to make sure he is healing. You know, we don't have answers, but he's okay. Type of thing is that, you know, we as special needs families go through a lot of things that it is more exhausting to share and ask for support than it is just to keep it to ourselves. And that's something that, you know, one of the reasons that I went ahead and I shared that was, you know, I have my support circle. I'm good. I didn't need to post it out on social media for attention, but I did want people to have awareness that there are things that are happening that us as special needs siblings, and for all the parents who are watching, I know you guys do this too. Just know that the siblings, this is one of the things that we will do. We will keep it to ourselves because we're like, I don't know if everybody needs to know that. People are not going to get it. They're going to give me a bunch of advice that I really don't want. And so when we talk about breaking limits or, you know, really moving outside of what is expected from a person with disability, that is going to have to, it's going to require us to start sharing more of these stories of what it really looks like behind the scenes, even in something as what might seem as small as a crisis of a black eye, but that's really a big thing that's happening in our family right now.
Well, yeah. And it makes me sad to hear you say that. I understand this is the reality, though, that you don't share because, you know, the average person, average, whatever that looks like, it can share and, oh, gosh, you know, so sorry that happened. And that's like as far as it will go, usually. But from writing my book, from working with all the families that I've worked with under the Master IP Coach Mentorship and through that system, I have found out that there is all this extra that comes along with being the parent or being the sibling or being the person with the disability when something happens. There's a myriad of questions. Well, is it this? And then all the advice, like you said, you know, just starts pouring in. And so I'm very thankful that you share that with us and that anyone who shares that, because just like with this show, I think that the more exposure people have, the more normalized it will become. And, yeah. And people will learn better ways to respond. I was actually in a parent group for parents of children with special needs yesterday or today. And the question was, what is something you should not say to a parent of a child with a disability? And I mean, it was like instant. I mean, there was like hundreds of comments.
Well, can I share one? Can I share?
Of course.
One? You should never, like, here's one of the reasons that I don't share is because I feel like then we get into the competition of who has it worse, or I totally get it. It's not that bad. Or, oh, I completely understand, you know, what happened because my child, and then they share something in a way where you're just like, no, like, I appreciate your experience. However, that is different than what I am talking about. I'll share a story about my dad wrote me a letter when my daughter was in the hospital, experiencing some complex medical issues. And again, we had no answers. I'll tell her story on another day. I'm pretty protective over the details of her story just because she is 18 on her own across the country, starting her life. And that's exciting because there was a time where the doctors said that would never be possible. So as we were going through this trauma and she was going through this trauma, my dad wrote me a letter and said, you will get frustrated when you go to the playground going forward and you listen to the other parents talk about things like a boogie nose or a scrape on the knee. And he warned me, like, you're not going to be able to have those conversations anymore. And that's okay. And then he told me who he leaned on, which was his parents and my mom's parents. And he was just kind of like, almost like a welcome to the club. And it's okay that your experience is different. And that's one of the reasons that we don't share, because it is very hard. I have a best friend who has a brother who does not have a disability. So when she tells me stories about her brother, I don't even have stories like I can't share in her experience because I don't have a brother or sister experience like that. So again, Shelley, I appreciate that you're helping share these stories. And I really do hope that if somebody is listening and you have a friend who has a sibling or a child with disability, just make sure when they do confide in you, when they take that moment to be vulnerable and say, here's what's happening. We just typically want to hear like, wow, you're doing a great job. Like, and we don't want to hear, we couldn't do that. Okay. Like, we couldn't do that. I don't know how you do that. No, like, we don't have a choice, but just like, wow, like, you're doing really great. Is there anything that I could do for you to support you? I know you have a lot of things to figure out. That would be amazing.
That is so awesome. Thank you for sharing that. Because I do, I think that when I was looking at all those comments in that thread of what should you not say, that was what came to mind, is that people, not all of them, because some of them, I'm sorry, they were just asinine. but some of them, I think people are thinking they're being comforting or they're being helpful or they're being encouraging, but it doesn't land that way to the person receiving the comment.
And right. And here's the thing, like, I have thick skin because I'm always like, if your intention is in the right place, I'm not going to get offended. Just know that I may not mention the next crisis to you because right. We might not be the right fit for sharing and support.
Yeah. And again, talking about the stories in my book, as you mentioned, you know, that people would say to your dad, or that you would have this, you know, oh, at the playground, somebody complaining that their child has a boogie in their nose. I can remember when I interviewed Michael's mom, that she said something very similar, that Michael is in a wheelchair and he has been in a wheelchair pretty much all of his life. And she heard somebody at like a McDonald's indoor play place complaining that they couldn't see their child in the play place. And she was like, just be happy that they can get up and hide in it on their own. Yeah. You know, and it's just, it's one of those things that you don't think about, you know, what someone else's experiences might be, and that they wish they had the same complaints that you have.
Yeah.
And so I very much appreciate that you shared that. So when your brother is younger than you, right?
He is. He reminds me of it all the time. He's 2 years younger than me.
I laugh because I have an older sibling and I remind him frequently also. So
there are some things that are very typical between us. He did a podcast interview with me. He made sure to tell everybody, like, he's stronger than me in golf. He, you know, like all the things that he can do better than me, that I'm old, that I'm annoying. And then he laughs afterwards because he knows that that's funny. Yeah.
Yeah. So you said, you know, you were in school with him for a very short amount of time. And during however short that was, you saw him out on the playground, not only standing up against the wall, but I am presuming then that because he was standing up against the wall, he was being treated very differently by teachers and students. Is that true?
Yeah. So his class was very similar to what happens now. Like when I say inside of the Master IP Coach Mentorship that special education has not changed in, you know, 35, 40 years, I'm not lying. It's true. So if you just think about today, you know, you've got a self-contained classroom. It's the only special education classroom in the building. They have one classroom. It's down whatever hallway it's down. Every now and then, those kids from the class, you'll like see them walking down the hall or, you know, out at recess. So my brother's whole class was up against the wall. And I can remember telling my mom, and I do remember that the reasoning that was given by the teacher to my mom is that the other kids didn't want our class in their way while they were playing kickball. So we had them stand to the side to not disturb the other children. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. And so, of course, yeah. My mom's like, well, why wouldn't you just teach him to play kickball? Like, he knows how to play sports. He's in Special Olympics. Like, he could play. This was also the same classroom that my brother came home and said, and my mom says, what did you do at school today? And my brother says, snap, button, and zip. And my mom's like, snap, button, and zip? Like, you like. So she has the conversation with him. Now, my brother has very, very, very broken English to this day. I mean, like one word, two or three word phrases. You got to be in context. But just like any, you know, adult or child with a disability, with your family, you can communicate more because we know how to fill in those blanks and kind of finish that sentence or ask the right questions to get, you know, more information. So my mom has the conversation with him and figures it out and calls up the teacher and says, hey, like Robert says that he was working on snap, button, and zipping. Is that true? And the teacher says, yes, that's amazing that he told you that. And my mom goes, what are you talking about? She goes, we didn't know he could talk. And like share that information. My mom says, well, not only can he share that information, but he's known how to snap, button, and zip for years. Pretty sure he's in the wrong classroom. Oh. So, it was there's a lot of stories kind of like that, that add up to why I do what I do and why I am that out of the box thinker, because I saw what a program in a box could provide or could not provide for a student. So my mom went the route of advocating for my brother to have a change in placement. She went and she observed placements for everybody who says, I can't get in to go see my child's placement or see alternatives. I'll tell you, this is why this is it. All of the methods that I talk about come from experience of watching my mom and my mom's friends. And then, of course, I was a teacher too. So there's, you know, experiences in there. But she ended up advocating and got him into a private therapeutic day school, which was 100% the best decision that could have ever happened for him. And she did it all by herself in the 80s with like no lawyer, no computers, no Google, no Facebook support groups, no nothing. And you know what? I would say that most of her friends thought she was crazy because at the time, none of my brother's friends went to that school. And this is a school, for those of you who are not aware of how sometimes this works in certain states. So in Illinois, if you want an alternative placement outside of your standard public school kind of classroom that they're offering, it has to be like an Illinois State Board approved school. You have to get permission from your district to go. There is no private pay. It costs $80,000 to $100,000 a year. Basically, the district has to concede and say, we cannot service this child in our school, so we will tuition them out to this specialized school. And that's what my mom was able to accomplish on her own. Funny thing is, I can name probably 6 to 8 of my brother's friends that ended up at that school, not because they went to the same school as my brother. They were in surrounding districts, but they were kind of like, well, if Catherine's mom can do that, maybe we should look at that too. And to this day, I don't work one-on-one with clients anymore because I spend all my time with you guys, master coaches and training you guys. But when I took one-on-one clients up to even just a few years ago, I'm still doing outside placements. I have clients who are in that same school that my brother went to in the 80s. It's an amazing place, but it took really negative situations to get there.
Yeah. And that's amazing. I mean, I think about that. You have a saying, and I'll probably not get it right, so correct me, but it's love your child until the world thinks you're crazy and then loves them some more.
I say believe. Yeah. So is it okay? Believe in your child until the world thinks you're crazy and then believe more.
Yeah. And that's a prime example of why that is so important. And that kind of leads me into a question about inclusion. Do you want to talk a little bit about inclusion?
Sure.
Okay. All right.
So I'll talk about it all. You just tell me, what do you want to talk
about? Well, because it's a hot topic right now. And, you know, there for years now has been the whole 100% full inclusion push. I have my thoughts on that, but I would like to hear your thoughts on that.
So I think it starts with the definition of inclusion. So do I feel that every child should feel 100% included? Yes. Do I think that inclusion is different for every child? Yeah, just like it is for us. So like, here's the thing. Do I want the invite to go to the concert with my friends? Yes, I do. Am I going to say yes? No, I'm not. I'm not going. I don't want to go. I am what they call an extroverted introvert, right? So like when I'm like, I love this. I love being on stage teaching all things special education. I am not going to the party unless it's, we're going to talk special education at the party. Then I might go to the party. It's just, we all have our different things that we like and how we want to be included. Children are no different. So when people say, oh my gosh, your brother went to a private therapeutic day school. It's so sad that he had to be excluded from the community and all because the school didn't. And why didn't your mom push more? And how come she didn't help fix the system? And like, there's people that will straight out say like, oh, I would never do that for my child. I will fix that teacher. I will fix that system. There comes a point where it's not worth the child suffering through the fixing. And you figure out what is the best situation at this time. And so at that time, it was a private therapeutic day school. And he ended up staying there all the way through graduation. And you know what? He never stood on a wall again. He never was told he couldn't play on a team again. In fact, he went on a senior trip across the country to Florida, to Disney World without my parents. That would have not happened in a, what senior trip in a public school is going to take a person with Down syndrome who has the language abilities of maybe a preschool or kindergartner and give them the independence for a road trip, not even a plane trip, a road trip across the country.
Oh.
And then days at Disney World and then a road trip back. Like, yeah, that's independence. That's pretty freaking cool. So when I think about inclusion, I think about the individual. I think what fits them, what makes them have inclusion should not be painful for the person who is different. Now, if it makes everybody else a little uncomfortable, I'm okay with that. But it should not be uncomfortable for the person who needs the accommodations or who needs the extra support. So I would rather see a child included where they feel joy. And that does not, here's the thing. My brother has, and I'm going to brag on him for a minute. Oh my gosh. And it's almost like, I want to say sorry to any of my peers who might be watching. I might be talking, you're going to be like, she's talking about me. Meaning that I'm still connected to a lot of my special needs sibling friends, right? Mm-hmm. In that way. But here's the thing. I can name off one person and say, she's a person with Down syndrome who has higher reading levels, higher language abilities, higher this, higher that, like has higher academics altogether in so many different ways. But my brother is more independent and has held a job in the community longer than she ever has. Now, I'm not saying one is better than the other.
Right.
Okay. So, but what I'm saying is inclusion, it looks different for everybody. And she had kind of a traditional public school inclusion experience. Okay. So my brother and her now, if you look at them and you look at their life experiences, it took them in different directions. And the direction that she went with the higher academics and really push for that was not the right direction for my brother. And I want to clarify, that doesn't mean that a private therapeutic day school is low expectations. It was different expectations. If I use a baseline of judgment of academic skill of, you know, kindergartners can do this, first graders can do this, second graders can do this. So like, that's what I say. When I look at it from an educator point of view, my brother has lower skills according to standardized kind of measurements than many of his peers with Down syndrome. But if you look at the other standardized scales when it comes to independent living or when it comes to leisure and hobbies, when it comes to these things, my brother's skills are like off the charts, probably very close to normal for a 40-something-year-old man. So, and again, I'm not saying one is right or wrong. Like my brother could never work in an office. He doesn't have those skills to do that. This person that I'm talking about, that I'm thinking it was his best friend when we were growing up, she could work in an office kind of thing. So again, so when I talk about inclusion, I'm looking at what is the best for this child. And you know what? I don't believe that you can have it all in the school system. I really don't. I don't even know if I've ever said that before out loud. I don't think that you can have it all. I don't think there are only so many hours in the school day. There are only so many staff members. There are only so many deficits that we can address in a school day. There's only so much. I do say we have to prioritize. I do say that right. A lot. So what did my mom need for my brother to be included in his school and in his community versus this other family maybe that I'm talking about here, and you know, which represents a lot of other families? What do they need? They needed something different for inclusion and what that looked at. And where those skills lead in the future, it does make a difference to what their inclusion looks like in the future. Oh, that's a whole nother topic that we could talk. What does inclusion in the school look like? And how does that impact inclusion in the future? Because what you need to be included in the school, oh, I'm going to get on a soapbox just for a second, Shelley. What you need to be included in the school classroom is 100%, okay, maybe not 100, 99% different than what you need to be included out in the community.
Yeah. I actually, it's funny that you said that inclusion in the future, because I do another video podcast called Friday with Fran. Mm-hmm. And she and I were interviewed by another podcast person, and she titled our podcast "The Future of Inclusion," because Fran has raised, now they are adult children, and both of them have disabilities. She herself became a person with a disability about 5 or 6 years ago. And so what we talk about on Friday with Fran is just like all of her perspectives from the personal life family side, and my perspectives from the teacher side and the Master IEP coach side. And when we were interviewed, we were talking about inclusion and how that has looked different over her kids' lives, but now especially since she has become a person with a disability, and how that has changed. And then we talked about what can families do, what can school districts do, what can classrooms do to have, you know, children be included. And I mentioned one thing that you had said in one of our teachings, which was just have a name tag for the child when they come.
Oh my gosh, yeah, please. Please put the dang name tag on a desk for a kid. Why? Why is a child? Why would a child ever walk into a room and there's 20 name tags and this kid is number 21 and he doesn't have a place? Stop it. Like, and you know, there's extras sitting in that teacher's desk. You know, she always has extras, which for when she wrote that, I wrote out a name and oops, she spelled it wrong. Or that new kid is coming, a transfer from another. She's got extras that match. And she needs to write out and give every child deserves a space. So, yeah. So what, you know, what that looks like, whether it's a private therapeutic day school and that's where inclusion is going to take place and you get included in a different way, you get included in the community in a different way. And you know what? You come out with different skills. Or if you're talking kind of what we all kind of picture when we think about inclusion in the public school, you know, there's ways to do that right too. And you know what? We will come out with different skills. Neither one of those sets are wrong. It's just different. And wherever, you know, the things that the school couldn't provide for my brother, my parents had to seek, you know, supports elsewhere. And it's the same thing for the family who chooses to stay in the public school and you know, work towards kind of that traditional inclusion, breaking the barriers kind of thing. They're going to need different supports outside of school too, because again, we only have so many school hours. The bottom line is no child should ever feel like they don't belong in their learning environment, whatever environment is chosen.
And you're very passionate about that. And I wonder if that goes back to seeing your brother at the school with you before he felt like he was included and before he felt where he was where he was supposed to be.
Yeah, I'm sure, you know, I mean, I'm old, right? So for that memory to be in my head, it had to have some kind of impact in there. But it is, you know, it's very much when people would give me a hard time in our own disability community. Here's the other, there's a lot of shaming of each other within the disability community. So yeah. When I would have people say to me, I cannot believe your mom chose that. Your mom segregated your brother, your mom this, your mom that. I mean, that it's like internal bullying that happens in our disability community. I said, listen, I went to a school here. First of all, I didn't go to my regular public school. I went to what was considered kind of like a magnet school in our area. So I went to a magnet school. I went to a small high school because I didn't want to go to the large high school. So I chose a smaller environment. I had that choice. You know how people with disabilities get choice? Parents who advocate. That's how they get choice. So I had a choice where I went. So I made a choice to go to a small high school that didn't have any sports, that only had academic clubs. I was a nerd. We had academic clubs. It was a completely different setup than the typical public high school. I chose to go to school with people who had the same values as me as early as age. I was probably 14 when I started high school. Why should my brother not have the choice to go where he's going to thrive and connect with people who have the same values as him? And that, you know, that was for him, he had a very, just a very cool experience. Like I said, everything from basketball team to swim team to senior trips to plays, those things were very important to him. He thrives on the, I mean, he went to school every day with a Michael Jordan jersey on. If you're from Illinois and you know anything about the
Absolutely.
Dynasty, that's what we did. I mean, he cared more about making sure he had time on the court during the school day with his friends than he cared about the dang math worksheet. And you know what? He learned his math on the court better than he learned it at the worksheet. He would not have had that opportunity had he not gone to a different placement. Were there downsides to that placement? Sure. Are there downsides to every placement? Yep.
Yeah. And I love, because of your experiences, how you help us as Master IEP coaches take a step back and stop looking and saying, oh, this is the norm. This is, oh, we feel sorry for because, or, oh, this is the way to do it because, and it has a lot to do, I believe, with your experiences of seeing the things that your mom advocated for your brother and how your brother has thrived in environments that some people today, as you pointed out, still think were wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I so appreciate that because we do, we just get these cognitive biases is what they're called. And we don't really pay attention to them until they're challenged. Yeah. And we just go about our day thinking a certain way or going about our life. And it's only when, and I'll be honest, and I've said this to you before, but I want to say this to anyone who's listening, that when I took the mentorship course, you teach business and you teach special education things. I'm a former special education teacher. I felt like I was solid with the special education stuff, but I didn't have any clue about running a business. And so I really went into the mentorship thinking I'm probably not going to worry too much or need much of the special education stuff. I just need the business stuff. And it turns out that I needed both. I'm going to say equally. And I was really surprised by that because you brought things out that I hadn't ever thought about, or at one time I knew, but had gotten trained out of me. And so I think that's a good segue to talk about the Master IEP Coach Mentorship. And, and by the way, hi Shay, I don't know if you're still with us or not, but she was able to pop in earlier and said hi. And I don't know if she's still with us. Cause you know, she's still teaching every day full time. So, and we just had Fran of Friday with Fran join us. So, you missed it, Fran. I was talking about you a couple of minutes ago. It was all good, I promise. So tell us what the Master IEP Coach Mentorship is. I'm going to put what I think is the right link for anyone who wants to sign up for the mentorship to use my referral link. I think I have the right one. I hope I do. When I clicked on it, it went to the countdown page. So
okay, if it went to the countdown page, you should be good. You should be good. Okay. All right, so the Master IEP Coach Mentorship came about because what happened through all the things that we just talked about, I thought, I'm going to become a special education teacher and I'm going to save the world from the inside of my classroom. Like I will never do what some of the teachers did to my brother, right? And that's a young, immature mindset. But man, I was like determined, like I got this. So I go to school and I get a bachelor's degree. I go right on, I get my master's degree. I got 5 different teaching certificates. I got into the school system and I went, oh, this is why things are so difficult. I loved teaching. I loved my students. I don't know really any teacher who says any different than that. But I will tell you that the process of IEPs, the red tape of IEPs, the lack of mentorship when it came to IEPs, all of that played into, this, oh my gosh, what am I doing? I'm supposed to be here like changing the world. And this is, I don't want to say it wasn't hard. It was different than what I could have ever imagined. So yes, it was hard, but I just mean, it was different. And I was like, okay, all right. So if this is what's happening in, during my school day, I was that teacher that you wanted the little wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Hey, don't tell anybody I told you this to my students' parents. So I would tell them things. And, I'm just going to be totally transparent. I would go as far as writing the letter to the admin, which, by the way, was my boss. And I would, probably, thank goodness there was no digital footprints back then. So I just like wrote everything out and I gave it to the parent. The parent would send it to the boss, to my boss, and my boss would come to me and say, is this true? Like, do we really need these things for this child to get an appropriate education? And I would say, why, yes. Yes, we do. Do what this parent says. Like, I'm totally on board with it. So we started to get things. Like, I had walked into my classroom. I had no curriculum. All of a sudden, I got curriculum. I had no air conditioner in my classroom. Yes, we even got an air conditioner because the mom was telling me how her son just had open heart surgery and he can't be in the heat. And I think we're going to need a change in placement. And I'm like, I don't think we need a change in placement. I think we just need an air conditioner. Like, I want to teach your son, little like 6-year-old, 7-year-old with Down syndrome. Like, I just wanted to eat him up. And I'm like, aww, no, don't leave. I'm like, here, you know, in order for your child to access their education, they need to have a controlled climate. You know, here are some options. Well, lo and behold, I got air conditioning. Like, weird things were just like happening. And I'm like, this is great. How long can I keep this up and keep my job? Now, mind you, I was never, really like breaking confidentiality of my peer, my colleagues. I respected the school district. I respected my boss. But the bottom line is parents have to know how to write letters. They have to know how to ask for things. And they need to know things that they simply just don't know. So I was doing that. So I ended up leaving the school system. And I continued to take, and there's a couple of little job transitions in there as I'm figuring out life, but I was continuing to take clients because one family told another family, told another family, told another family. So I'm going through my process of helping them achieve. I can tell you in 25 years, I've never sent a family to do process. I've achieved, for families that, millions and millions and millions of dollars of private education, private tutoring, public school services, all of these things, because it is possible to do this in a collaborative way, even in some of the toughest situations with this. And I'm not saying that there's 100% success. That would be ridiculous. But I will say that there's 100% of improvement, meaning like every there's room for improvement, maybe not an ideal situation, but there's always room for improvement in a child's school day and a child's, outcomes in their IEP. So as I started to take on clients, school districts started to say, 'cause then I started to go to meetings 'cause I was no longer, employed by a district. So I started to go to IEP meetings and they're like, who do you work for? And I'm like, me. and they're like, no, like you couldn't have done this. And I'm like, no. And they're like, well, can you come train our staff? Because we really like what you did. So I was brought in as what some might call a traditional advocate, but I never called myself an advocate. Most parents referred to me as an educational consultant, but really I was doing advocacy work. We just all know advocacy has an ugly tone a lot of times in special ed. So the district said, come on in. And I'm like, okay. Holy cow, that was scary. I'm like, I'm training teachers and I'm the one who left the classroom to go teach parents. I'm like, okay, here we go. So I trained them. And then I ended up speaking for nonprofits and I ended up doing all that. And I still got my clients and people kept on saying, I want to do what you do. Can you teach me? I said, no, I don't know how to teach you how to do this. I've just been doing it for 20 years. I don't know how to package this up. But I did the work. I figured out that there were very kind of systems that I use when I go through an IEP, when I'm asking for different things, when we're negotiating for things, when I'm training teachers, when I'm training parents. And one of the big things is that I never keep a secret between a parent and a school in the way like we're very transparent, which, I thought if I'm going to do this, if I'm going to teach people to do what I do, that means that I'm not going to have parent trainings and then have teacher trainings. We are training together. So the Master IP Coach mentorship was born out of that, of people asking, teach me to do what you do. And I was a single mom for a very long time and I was a sole financial supporter. So when people say, can you really make money doing this? Yes. Oh, I don't want to charge families because, it's okay. It's okay to get paid for your expertise. And two, working one-on-one with families is not the only way to create income. So special education needs change, and we need change makers. And if you decide to become an expert and become a master IEP coach, I want to give you every tool that you need to change the special education outcome for yourself and for others. Whether you stay in your current role and you don't run the business, or you decide, you know what, I'm going big. I'm going to help other people too. So that's really where the Master IEP Coach Mentorship came from. It came from 20 years of experience and really saying, you know what, this could have a ripple effect. If we get more people to do things like ask for curriculum in our school system, if we have more parents knowing the questions to ask, which actually helps the teachers then get what they need. If we have more administrators who understand why parents are asking for certain things, we can get to more yeses. And that's what the Master IEP Coach Mentorship does. It helps you think differently and become an IEP expert, again, whether that's for yourself or because you want to help others.
And so for anybody who has watched hashtag No Limits or Friday with Fran or worked with me individually, you know about my passion and the level of my passion. But I think you all saw in listening to Catherine just there how passionate beyond even my own level that she is. And you can tell that this is a labor of love for her. I don't even know if it's labor for you. I really do think you love every aspect of it. You even love the, like I said, like the businessy kinds of things, you know, like doing all the social media and, you know, making sure that people are aware that we are out there. I've been doing this now, I guess, 3 or 4 years with you, and I'm starting to get some of that momentum because you come from way up north and I come from way down south in Illinois, and our surroundings are very different as far as population.
Yeah.
And so it's been, you know, being out here kind of in the middle of the nowhere. And plus, I've worked in most of these schools, either as a sub or an aide or as a full-time teacher. And so they all kind of know me. And I ruffled feathers when I taught. I wasn't as smooth as you about getting the information to the parents. I could just kind of put it in front of the other teachers' faces, and I wasn't always nice about it. And so for any of my teacher friends that are watching that I used to work with, I apologize. I was rude, I'm sure. but know that I did it because I love my students and I wanted to get for them what I felt they were supposed to have and what the law says, honestly. But if you want to be a master IEP coach, Catherine has an amazing program. When we come together at any time, now I didn't get to go to the one in Florida that you had a few months ago, but when we've been together in the summers, it is amazing. It is incredible to be with people who understand me and whom I understand. There are, you know, one or two people around me that get me, but to be with the other Master IEP coaches, it literally is an entire tribe of hundreds now people who understand pretty much the exact same way that I do. And it's, I mean, you want to talk about an inclusive environment. Every summer, I look so forward to the conference because I know I'm going to be with people. And every year I've made new friends that are so much like me. And I, as a special ed teacher, anybody who's watching who's a special ed teacher, you probably feel like you're on your own island.
It's kind of full circle to what we talked about before, right? So like I talked about how as a special needs sibling, like we don't share a lot of things because it's different. But that's true for special ed teachers. That's true for, you know, us Master IEP coaches who were like, we see things differently and we see the possibilities. You have to get fueled by people who believe that same thing with that. Yeah. So I love that. I want to make sure that everybody knows that, yeah, it's an online program. So 100% online. So Shelly will tell you, you can learn at your own pace and you can dig in with us at all different levels. And we've got the mentorship where you get everything. And then we've got the network where you continue to get advanced trainings and advanced connections and referrals. And then we have live in person because it is the mentorship is something that I wanted to make sure reached people where they were at and gives them what they need. Some people are like, I want to be a master IP coach, but I have 3 kids with disabilities. I can't leave my house for that long. Great. I got you. You know, some people are like, get me out of the house and I want to go on a cruise down the Milwaukee River onto Lake Michigan with a taco bar. Guess what? I got you too.
She did. It was awesome.
That's what the taco bar is new this year. Last year was Midwest food. It was burgers and brats.
Now we're going to do
a taco bar. Cause let's just face it. After all this heavy stuff we just talked about, we need some tacos and some fun too together.
Oh yeah. We're still waiting for the karaoke bar.
I don't know. I think y'all are on your own for that. Remember that whole extrovert introvert, like, thank you for inviting me out to karaoke. I will not be hosting it, nor organizing it, nor attending it, but thank you for the invite.
Yeah. For anybody who does know me, they just went, Shelly karaoke'd what? Oh yeah, I did. And Kevin karaoke'd with me, and there's video proof. So if you haven't already seen it, make sure you ask me the next time you see me. It's a fabulous program. It's definitely self-paced in the fact that, yes, we had, and I guess you're still running it this way, was it monthly or weekly meetings online, but then those were recorded. So if we couldn't do the lesson or we couldn't do that, you know, meet that timing. Cause I think when I did it, I was like 3 or 4 weeks behind when it wrapped up. But I still got my certificate that hangs on my wall. It's in a different part of my house, but I still get to call myself a master IEP coach. And it is so wonderful to have all of the people, friend, I just said without video, it didn't happen, meaning my karaoke. So,
yeah.
So I am getting that momentum. More and more people are saying, what are you? What do you mean you're not an advocate? And I'm like you. Advocate was a bad word. I didn't ever want to promote myself as an advocate, but then even once I found you and you were not as well, it's like, no, we're coaches. Like if you want to improve your skill at anything, you don't have to be really bad at the skill. You just want to improve the skill. You hire a coach. That's what I tell people that we do. Because we are, no matter how good an IEP is, like you said, there's always something else that you might be missing because you just didn't know to consider it. No one had given you that. Oh, we could do this. Oh yeah, that might be more successful. Or, oh yeah, that would be even better than what we're doing.
Yeah, I just had a teacher message me. She just joined the Master IEP Coach Mentorship. So the way that works now, because things have evolved based on, here's the thing. I really am running the program. So when people say like, you know, what, you know, how does this all work? It's like, well, it's constantly evolving based on needs. And we all know the world changed some of those needs over the last couple of years. So when you enroll, you get access to all of the modules immediately. You also get access to 2 virtual conferences per year. So that's what we're gearing up for right now. That's why I told Shelly, okay. I said there's swag in front of me that's getting mailed out. So if you follow me on Instagram, you're going to see all these swag boxes going out.
I get new swag. Not that I need any. I mean, I've got my sign up there. I've got my sweatshirt on. I've got my mug.
Well,
but I do need more.
I can't even you know, you're getting a fleece and you know, you're getting a t-shirt. You're also, if I remember right, you're speaking at the conference.
I am.
So you get a speaker shirt too.
Yay!
So that's on its way.
She really does load you up with swag. The only thing I think I've purchased is the sweatshirt, everything. Oh no, I did. I get that sign up there.
Yeah.
I did purchase.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I have
I'm all about the swag. I'm all about the swag. So you become a master IP coach. You do it all on your own whenever you want to, but twice a year you can join us at a conference and I include it. I do not make you pay extra for that because I want you to meet your fellow master IP coaches. Once a year, we meet for a VIP weekend in Milwaukee. And at any time, once you become a Master IP Coach, you can join us in what we call the Master IP Coach Network. And that's where our coaches are working every day, collaborating, connecting, referring. I'm coming in and I'm doing business trainings once a month. I do education trainings once a month and really taking it to the next level. So there's so many options. So it's like, I just want to learn it. Don't know what I want to do with it. Cool. You know, I want to learn it and I want to be with Master IP coaches working and building my impact in special education. I got you there. So there's all different ways for you to get the information, and you decide, how do you learn best? That's the special ed teacher in me, right? So you have every way. There's audio, there's videos, there's worksheets, there's live, there's recorded, there's in person. You choose.
Yeah. And as you say, no matter where you sit at the IEP table, you can become a master IEP coach.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Everybody is welcome.
Well, Catherine, it's time to stop. You know, you and I can sit and talk for hours, but
we could.
We need to, I try to stay within the hour, and yep, we're at 59 and a half minutes. So it is time to say goodbye. Thank you so much. I have been so looking forward to this. I'm glad this was finally able to work in both of our schedules, and I will see you in a couple weeks, and then
absolutely,
I will see you in a few months.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Bye, everyone.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelly Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelly Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelly Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shellykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shellykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.